From the studios of WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. And with me in the studio today is a very special guest. You know her as NPR's political commentator, who joins Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne on Morning Edition most Mondays to discuss politics. Cokie Roberts is also a political commentator for ABC News, a best-selling author, and a nationally syndicated columnist. With a career in broadcast journalism spanning more than 40 years, Cokie Roberts has been inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame. She was cited by the American Women in Radio and Television as one of the 50 greatest women in the history of broadcasting. And people have now given up counting her awards, although I should say the collection includes three Emmys. In 2008, the Library of Congress named her a living legend. Cokie Roberts has written a series of books documenting the role of women in the development of the United States. Her latest book, Capital Dames, explores the role of Washington's women during the Civil War era. Cokie Roberts, welcome to Coastline.
So nice to be here, Rachel. Thanks so much.
How does bringing forward the history, the perspectives, the experiences of these women enhance our understanding of the Civil War?
Well, of all history, because the truth is that you really can't write accurate history with leaving out half of the human race. And, of course, that's what's happened in most of the writing of history. And it really does not give you a full picture of what was happening at any given period of time if you don't know what was happening among the women.
What kind of impact do you think chronicling this part of history has on, say, a girl's psychology growing up today?
I think it's very important for girls, but I also think it's very important for boys to understand that women played a significant role in the founding of the country and the resistance to the British and the creation of the new republic, and then in the era of the greatest tragedy of our history, the Civil War, and then helping bring the country back together at the end of the war. So I think that all of that is very useful for children of both sexes, but also for grown-ups of both sexes. But yes, particularly for girls, because there's so much that they don't recognize when all they see is men in uniform and documents and dates. How can you relate to the history? And we know for a fact that our students know very little history. The numbers are shocking. Their civic education is equally shocking because they're tied together. And you can't have educated voters and responsible citizens if you don't know something about your history and your civics.
When you were in school and you think back to what it was like for you to learn history, obviously your career shows that you didn't think about any limits on yourself as a woman. But is that something that happened to women from your generation, looking at history and just hearing about men's accomplishments?
Sure, of course. But I was very lucky because I was raised by a wonderful order of nuns the Society of the Sacred Heart, who took girls seriously in the 1950s and raised us to believe we could be anything we wanted to be, except priest, and they were bitter about that. But the the fact is that was unusual. And the combination of those religious women and my parents made it so that I didn't feel the same kinds of strictures as a lot of other women my age did.
You've said that writing women's history is detective work.
It is.
What kind of detective work did you have to do for Capital
Dames? Well, because you don't really have the papers available in the same way that you do for the men's papers. Now, this era, the Civil War, was easier than the founding period and the early republic just because it's later and you can get more information. But the ability to find what women themselves wrote remains difficult. And even once you find it, it is letters that have not been transcribed or diaries that have not been transcribed. So it's then deciphering what you've detected. And so that can be very, very difficult as well. In fact, I can't do it. I have to hire people to do it. I can't read those letters.
One of the conclusions that a reader of the book has to reach is that women of the time had a profound impact on public policy. In spite of the limitations at the time, they were property of their husbands, they couldn't vote, they earned less money doing exactly the same work. How did they manage to be as impactful as they were?
Well, what I keep finding is that women were highly influential. They, again, in the founding period as well, now mainly through the men, using their influence with powerful men. But even on their own, people would come to them and ask them for endorsements for products, or certainly ask them to get jobs for people, patronage jobs for people. So they did have a certain amount of their own influence that was recognized. What was interesting to me in Capital Dames in the Civil War period was that women who before the war had worked very much on behalf of their husbands or through their husbands or brothers or fathers, after the war did stand on platforms of their own and speak in their own voices. One of the best examples of that is a woman named Virginia Clay, who was married to Alabama Senator Clement Claiborne Clay, and she was a belle, a they described themselves as belles and talked about the belleship of someone and all of that. And she was a belle in Washington before the war, very witty and sharp-tongued, and people loved her, flirtatious, pretty. And she wrote a book about herself, in fact, called A Belle of the 50s. But totally working through the men before the war and totally unserious about such things as women's suffrage, that kind of thing. After the war, she was one of the primary activists on behalf of suffrage, led the Alabama suffrage campaign, stood on public stages with people like Horace Greeley, someone her husband fought bitterly before the war, and at the same time was not only advocating for a cause, but was effecting reconciliation by being on that platform with that man speaking. And so I saw that over and over again with these women, and I found that quite fascinating.
What was it about the war that allowed them to go from being, say, Chief Bell? That was actually a thing, wasn't it?
Yes.
That was a title,
yes.
Chief Bell.
Well, it was informal, but yes.
So what about the war changed their lives and the way they saw the world?
I think that their ability to do things that they never thought they could do made them understand that they could operate on their own. They also, in many cases, were widowed or needed to make an income. Verena Davis, Jefferson Davis's wife, certainly in that category. When he died, finally, she was left really with nothing. And she went to New York, much to the dismay of the Confederacy, and worked as a journalist, and she made a living that way. And so that was and her views, therefore, were very public, and her views were very different from what would have been considered acceptable for a Southern belle before the war. So she had the confidence to do that, having been First Lady of the Confederacy. And a lot of these women had to do all kinds of dangerous and difficult things that they didn't expect to have to do. And it gave them the confidence to stand on their own feet and say what they thought they wanted to say.
And speaking of First Ladies, you write about Mary Todd Lincoln. She's such a key figure in this era. But you've said that she wasn't one of your favorites, and she wasn't even someone that you really wanted to write about. You thought that had been done.
That's true. But also, she's really tough. I mean, she's today, I'm sure, she'd be diagnosed as bipolar. And she's just a very difficult human being. You feel sorry for her because she was tortured, but she was also just so hard to get along with. And so, and you see how Abraham Lincoln loved her, and she loved him. It was a love match, but they tortured each other. And you know, as somebody who's been married 49 years myself, I just look at that and think, oh, poor things.
How do you write about people that you don't like? Is that more difficult?
Absolutely. I won't say who. I originally was going to do this book about a family, and I thought that it was a story that had not been told. And then when I started researching it, I couldn't stand them, and so I couldn't do that book. So I changed to this, and this was a better book anyway.
And so when you're writing about these women, do you inhabit them? What's
sure.
the creative process like for you? Do you sit down at the dinner table with your husband?
Oh, yeah, I'm boring beyond belief. yes, and actually when one of them dies, I get quite upset. But sure, I mean, you are there in their lives for years, and so you get to know them quite well and to care about them. And then you're disappointed when they have a racist view and that kind of thing, you know.
Is there a way to understand that?
Of course.
In the context of the
time?
Or is it just not understandable?
Oh, no, it's understandable in the context of the time. Sure it is.
How do you think about that?
Well, I mean, if you have spent your life with slavery being an acceptable institution, it's very difficult to say it's unacceptable, particularly if you believe, as many people did, and as was true in many cases, that people who are enslaved in our family are being treated well and all of that. You do see that you can understand where these people are coming from. You can disagree with it and disapprove of it mightily, but you can understand it.
One of the things that I found striking about this book is when you're describing the political tension leading up to the war and just the atmosphere in Washington at the time, the level of vitriol and acrimony. If you substituted the names of modern-day politicians, is that possible? Could that almost
sure.
be something out of today's newspaper?
Yes, the big difference is they're not shooting each other now, and that's an improvement. And then they really were shooting each other. You know, there was a dueling ground right outside of Washington, Bladensburg, and people would go shoot each other over political speech. Metal detectors have improved that. But the fact is that this period we're living through right now is a very difficult, vitriolic, poisonous period. And it should be an object lesson that the last time we had such a terrible time was right before the Civil War, and it led to war. So people should keep that in mind.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking with Cokie Roberts. We'll be back in a moment.